My name is Ben Barrell, and this is Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that brings you an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. So I hope you're good. I hope all is well. It's not been the best week this week for the history of the world. Quite a difficult week for many, many people. I know we have listeners to this podcast in all areas of the globe. So if you are affected by what's happened in the last week, my heart goes out to you. We show solidarity with Ukraine. We hope this situation is brought to some sort of peaceful conclusion at some point soon. I thought I'd mention it because, as I say, we do have a very small amount of listeners in Ukraine right now, and our heart goes out to you from everyone. Thank you for your messages over the last week or so about the podcast coming back. More than appreciated. You can find us on social media, of course, at Bob Dylan Podcast on Twitter and on Instagram as well. And if you want more of this show, you can sign up for the extra show on Patreon right now. Let's do some more Patreon shout out, shall we? Hello to Lynn Gavin. Hi to someone just mysteriously calling themselves KP. Hello to Randy. Hi to Paul Schmitz. Hi to Whelan Double O. Hi to Max Ono as well. Hi to Amit Gerola, and hi to John Paul Flaherty as well. Thank you so much for subscribing on Patreon. You can subscribe too and get an extra show every single week. The most recent episode that's gone up actually is a little deep dive into Simple Twist of Fate, and coming up very, very soon in the next 24 hours on Patreon, we're going to have a little deep dive into Lovesick, another brilliant song, a couple of brilliant songs we've looked at there. You can join that if you want to. The link, as always, is in this episode's description, and there'll be a little clip from a recent Patreon episode at the end of this one, so stick around at the end if you want to hear that, and also stick around at the end if you want to hear what album we're going to be covering next on the main podcast. So far in this season, we've had a look at New Morning, of course, and now we're having a look at Down in the Groove. Where do we go next? Well, we go to a bit of a classic next, and you can find out where at the end of this episode. First, though, let's get to Down in the Groove, shall we? You know, an album that clearly isn't Dylan's best. I think we can all say that. In fact, that's pretty much how I start the episode. You know, I think with this podcast, and what surprised me when I first started doing it is that sometimes going over the albums that aren't good is as much fun, if not more fun, than going over the albums that are classics or the songs that are really good. I've mentioned this before in the podcast, I think, so forgive me for repeating myself, but it's kind of fun to work out where it went wrong or why an album failed when it could have been so much better. So I do enjoy these episodes, maybe, as I say, even a little bit more than going over the classics. So let's take a look at one of Dylan's least loved albums, shall we? This is 1988, Down in the Groove. Look, let's get this out of the way. This is not a good album. You know it, I know it. Sure, there's some that defend it, but you'd struggle to find anyone who is a massive fan of Down in the Groove. But is it Dylan's worst album ever? Well, almost. The title of Bob's Worst could easily be a two-horse race between this LP and its little brother, the first part of this creative nightmare, 1986's Knocked Out Loaded. But like that album, this, in some small way, is redeemed by a song, or even two. Knocked Out Loaded had Brownsville Girl that saves us from complete disaster, and here we have Silvio and Death Is Not the End. They both manage somehow to do the same. So let's start with the good, shall we? Death Is Not the End is a high point of sorts for the record. Although, interestingly for me, while I do like this song, I feel if this was on a better album, we might not give it as much attention and love as we do. We sort of cling to this like it's a life raft in the endless black sea of Down in the Groove's mundanity. When I do hear it out of context of this album, which I frequently do, I am often reminded that it's a decent rather than good or even great song. It's a song that is a collaboration, well, a collaboration of sorts. Collaboration is a long-running theme, not only on this album, but of this era of Dylan's career. And unfortunately, like elsewhere, the collaboration is an interesting one, even an exciting one on paper, but in practice, it's an exciting collaboration that, by the time it makes it onto tape, is unfortunately sapped of all of its energy. Full Force is the collaborator here. They are a hip-hop and R&B group and production team from Brooklyn, New York. However, instead of laying some beats down for Bob or even a bit of production, which would be exciting, their talents are relegated to backing vocals.
Not the end.
Now, don't get me wrong, they're good backing vocals, but it's just a bit of an anti-climax when you know they're going to be involved in this song beforehand. You expect so much, and like elsewhere on this album, you are given so little. The song itself ushers in themes that Dylan would mull over from here on out in his career. In fact, verse 3 could be an early draft of a song like Make You Feel My Love, for example, as Dylan sings words like, "When the storm clouds gather round you and heavy rains descend, just remember that death is not the end. And there's no one there to comfort you with a helping hand to lend. Just remember that death is not the end." The recording we hear on Down in the Groove is actually from the Infidels sessions some 5 years before, which is why it feels a little bit like an outlier at times, and is also the reason why Mark Knopfler is listed as the producer on this track and this track alone when it comes to this album. In the studio, it takes 4 attempts to get the song. It happens towards the end of a session, and while they seem pretty happy with it, it doesn't make the Infidels tracklist, for obvious reasons. Like I say, I just don't think the song is particularly great, and there are better songs on Infidels. In fact, almost every song is a better song. The actual words of this particular tune obviously suggest at life after death. But it's not the sort of shot of love territory we've been in before, with a stirring anthem proclaiming the joys of heaven. This is a sad song. It's hoping almost that we will live beyond this world, that this isn't your only shot, this is not your only time. It's actually a song about rebirth. It's a declaration, almost. Perhaps Dylan is musing over our actions on Earth and how memories of ourselves go on and live beyond our lives and how they can offer some sort of salvation for us. An explanation as to what is going on here might be brought into focus by the fact that around the time Dylan was also writing a song called Lord Protect My Child. This is a Christian song, the lyrics of which express concern for Dylan's children, so much so that a reviewer called the song an achingly candid blues plea, which provides a rare glimpse of Bob Dylan, the parent. In this period and on these songs, it feels like Bob is thinking about the people we are in our time on Earth, our responsibilities, and how our actions can make us as a person. In the former song, he sings, "Oh, the tree of life is growing, where the spirit never dies, and the bright light of salvation shines in dark and empty skies." In the final verse, we really do set foot on a road we'd explore in the following run of albums, right through to this current era even. Bob throws images of desecrated cities and decaying humans at us. He sings, "When the cities are on fire with the burning flesh of men, just remember that death is not the end. And you search in vain to find just one law-abiding citizen. Just remember that death is not the end." This always reminds me of 2009's song My Wife's Hometown, where Dylan sings, "State gone broke, the country's dry, don't be looking at me with that evil eye, keep on walking, don't be hanging around, I'm telling you again that hell's my wife's hometown." While most of the lines in Death Is Not the End do represent the themes that we will come onto in Dylan's work, the one line of "and you search in vain to find just one law-abiding citizen" stands out for me. This feels like a well-worn theme for Bob. We've seen a world gone wrong in his work for decades now, even going back right to the start of his work, right through to songs like Three Angels on the album we looked at in the last episode of this podcast, and beyond to Dylan's most recent album, 2020's Rough and Rowdy Ways. He seems to be exasperated by the state of the world. While it hasn't always been as apocalyptic as it has been on more recent albums, like Elsewhere, here there is hope that somewhere there is a better world waiting for us all. Whether that's heaven or some kind of alternative reality, a shadow kingdom if you will, there's little doubt he's hoping for a place of happiness, a utopia in some form. Death for us is not the end. That song is not the only collaboration on the record. Bob also teams up with Robert Hunter from the Grateful Dead. Dylan has had a few dealings with the Dead. They have gone on tour together, which produced an album too. And while Dylan seemed to be having fun with the band, the Grateful Dead seems to have a more fraught time with Bob. He would apparently change his mind last minute about set lists and generally not really fit into the band dynamic, which I guess isn't too surprising for us. But their run together does highlight what Dylan was going through at the time. He seems to be pretty lost in this period. He was also drinking a lot too, by some accounts. This happened mainly during the tour, and he didn't seem to have perhaps the same passion for his work that he had had previously. He might have been tired of his persona, for example. At the time, he'd not really had a new creative rush like he had before, and he was still trying to cast off what he had been previously, so much so he even tried to stop being a solo artist, to a degree. This became apparent after a slightly bizarre appearance at a Dead show in Inglewood, California. Dylan wasn't actually on tour with the band at the time, but he took to the stage anyway. Well, took to their stage anyway, I should say. He demanded to play with them at the show after just going there to watch them, and he also demanded to only play their songs. This is despite the fact he doesn't know the words to too many Grateful Dead tunes. This led to a member of the band apparently asking angrily, "What the fuck is he doing here?" as they left the stage. Eventually during the show, which as you can imagine was a little bit of a car crash, they forced Bob to play some of his own songs and managed to salvage the gig to a degree. But the story doesn't end there. Later, Bob called the Grateful Dead's office and informed them that he would like to join the band. Unsurprisingly, it was a no. They did the responsible thing, of course, and took a band vote, but it was a firm no, and Dylan was apparently crushed. While the tour with the Dead came in the summer of 1987, and that incident with the band vote happened in 1989, the actual sessions for Down in the Groove with Robert Hunter occurred in spring 1987. They collaborate on two songs. Both are captured in a session on the 16th of June in Sunset Sound Studios in Hollywood, California. Details are a little sketchy on the specifics, but what we do know is Jerry Garcia, Bob Weir and Brent Midland from the Dead were in the studio that day too. They did work on some tracks, and they watched Bob record a song called "The Ugliest Girl in the World." The song's rhymes remind me a little of the Under the Red Sky album. We are in nursery rhyme territory here. In fact, this could be a repurposed nursery rhyme easily. The song actually sounds like Dylan, but, you know, just minus all the magic. The low-rent rock sonics sound like a demo song you'd find on GarageBand in the early noughties, and the backing vocals, while technically good, are just kind of inane, really. While Dylan is on autopilot with the lyrics, he sings lines like, "The woman that I love, she got two flat feet, her knees knocked together, walking down the street. She cracks her knuckles and she snores in bed. She ain't much to look at, but like I said, you know I love her, yeah I love her. I'm in love with the ugliest girl in the world." The best bit is that Bob repeats the first verse's lyrics at the end of the song during the final verse. Somehow it's even worse to hear them second time round. Now, of course, this is a Dylan song. I'm sure if you Google hard enough, you can find a thrilling analysis of these words where the ugly woman is actually, I don't know, the Virgin Mary who's been cast aside in this sinner's world, or even how Dylan is actually singing of unfashionable religion or of Mother Nature or whatever you choose. And sure, we could easily go deep on this song, but for me, there's nothing really here to dive in on. And, you know, we are prone to overanalysis anyway, so we might just end up leaving this song here. But before we do, let me make one last point. For me, this song just isn't actually that fun, and it should be fun. I love a song full of nonsense, but it's stuck between stadium rock territory and forced joviality. Thankfully, the Hunter collaboration does work elsewhere, this time on track 7, Silvio.
Stake my future on a hill of the past. Looks like tomorrow is a coming on fast. Ain't complaining about what I've got. Seen better times, but who has not? Silvio, silver and gold. Won't buy back the beat of a hot grown cold. Silvio, I gotta go.
These songs together are like night and day. Unlike Death Is Not the End, though, Silvio could possibly stand its own ground on most of Bob's records. Those backing vocals from the Dead and others sound great. This is probably the best song on the album when we sit down and rate them all, and it's probably one of the best between Dylan and Hunter, although their work on Together Through Life, particularly the aforementioned My Wife's Hometown, and on the song Duquesne Whistle are also excellent too. Here, Dylan gives us an irresistible melody. It bounces more than an Olympic trampoline. His delivery is in the mode where he gives us lines as if he was a Tommy gun. He cruises here with the speed of a rapper while still retaining his unique vocal. The Sonics always remind me a little bit of the Desire album for some reason. I think it might be the guitars. For me, it sounds like a leftover session song from that record revamped for this next decade. As far as the themes behind it, well, like we've seen before, Dylan seems to be looking for meaning. In the chorus he sings, Silvio, silver and gold, won't buy back the beat of a heart grown cold. Silvio, I've got to go, find out something only dead men know. While the opening verse feels quite close to home, given the incident that would eventually occur with the Grateful Dead, as Bob sings, stake my future on a hell of a past. Looks like tomorrow is coming on fast. Ain't complaining about what I got. Seen better times, but who has not? This feels staggeringly on the nose for Dylan's career at the time. Elsewhere he sings, honest as the next jade rolling that stone. When I come knocking, don't throw me no bone. I'm an old boll weevil looking for a home. If you don't like it, you can leave me alone. Which deals in similar phrases to the songs Like a Rolling Stone and Ballad of a Thin Man from the Highway 61 Revisited album. But the whole thing feels a little too on the nose, which makes me think this might not be autobiographical and Dylan might not be referencing his own work here. Still, it feels like it could be a reflection. It is at least possible. Stone and bone and home and alone are all stark images from those songs. However, the chorus line of Silvio, silver and gold won't buy back the beat of a heart grown cold certainly feels like a successful rock star deep into their career full of riches. But this actually might not be Dylan. There's evidence to suggest that some of the heavy lifting when it comes to the song's lyrics came from Hunter. So perhaps we are hearing about a Hunter figure, or even Hunter himself, or even his take on Bob, or, well, we could continue down this road forever. Either way, it's a staggering fit for Dylan and perhaps even both men at this point of their career. Going back to that previous section, though, we have a reference, which isn't too surprising in Dylan's work. He sings, I'm an old boll weevil looking for a home. The boll weevil is a beetle that eats cotton buds. The inclusion of it here is a reference to the blues legend Leadbelly and his 1934 song Boll Weevil, which includes the opening verse, well, the old boll weevil and the little black bug come from a Mexico, they say. Came all the way to Texas just looking for a place to stay, just looking for a home. Just looking for a home. Dylan, as we've heard many times before on this podcast, is a big Leadbelly fan. He's mentioned him numerous times in interviews and concerts, and this is a nice reference to him in this song. This is only one of four Dylan originals on the LP, which tells its own story of where he was creatively at this point. And this is not forgetting that half of those were, of course, a collaboration. Another Dylan original is track 5, Had a Dream About You Baby. It is sandwiched between Death Is Not the End and The Ugliest Girl in the World, and repeats the sonics from the latter, which does give the album a nice synergy, if you will, but also reprises a trick that I'm not sure we really wanted in the first place. Once again, we're in Rock by Numbers territory here. The lyrics are frustrating too. They're just, well, boring. They're lost to a world of rock cliches. Bob sings, "I had a dream about you, baby. Late last night you came a-rolling across my mind. You've got the crazy rhythm when you walk. You make me nervous when you start to talk. I had a dream about you, baby. A dream about you, baby. Late last night you came a-rolling across my mind." We get it, Bob. You had a dream about someone you like. Again, I'm fine if Dylan wants to make a fun record, a little get-together with his mates, which is probably what this was on paper. But the real crime here is this album and this song particularly is just not fun. Like we've seen before, the album as a whole is just lacking in any real kind of joy. No one's cutting loose, no one's having a laugh, it's just stodgy. This track, in a different form, originally comes from the Hearts of Fire soundtrack, a film in which Dylan infamously starts. He was contracted to deliver 4 original songs for the accompanying soundtrack. He delivered 2 and a cover. And that was all they were going to get. The film itself was cursed. Not only was it a flop, but its director, Richard Marquand, died shortly after completing it, and Bob didn't even attend its premiere, which, combined with his 50% delivery on the soundtrack, really highlights his lack of interest in these particular projects at the time. Had a Dream About You Baby comes from a couple of Hearts of Fire soundtrack sessions, which happen in London on the 27th and the 28th of August 1986 at Townhouse Studio. Bew Hill is the producer of the sessions. Bew had worked with some big artists like Alice Cooper and Europe and Fiona, another Hearts of Fire star. In the sessions, they capture a cover of The Usual by John Hiatt, which incredibly was mistakenly put on the Down on the Groove LP in Argentina. It had been included on promotional cassettes in other regions meant for press and radio execs, but in Argentina, they got it on the album proper, due to a mistake. Seriously, this album was definitely doomed from the start. The actual bulk of the album's recording comes in sporadic sessions in 1987. We're in LA in March, April, May and June, on and off. Most of the early sessions are spent on covers that don't make it onto the LP. However, on the 16th of June, we get 4 songs done in one session. As is the case with Dylan, we often get runs of success in the studio. Dylan gets Rank Strangers to Me completed that day, which features some really nice bass work from Nathan East and a good vocal from Bob. They do well with the Albert Brumley original, and for one of the few times on the album, they actually manage to create an atmosphere. It's a surprisingly good end to the record, all things considered.
There in youth early dawn, I was happy and free. I looked for my friend.
Also in that productive session, they get Ugliest Girl in the World, Silvio and Shenandoah. The latter of which is a traditional song, sometimes called Old Shenandoah. The song apparently originated with American and Canadian voyagers, or fur traders, travelling down the Missouri River. Later, the song becomes a sort of sea shanty, if you like, on those boats. Again, it's a good cut on this album. Dylan's vocal is enigmatic. There's some nice mandolin in the right ear giving us a traditional sound, but the backing vocals are the real secret ingredient here. Alexander Brown, Madeleine Quebec, Peggy Blue and Dylan's then wife Carolyn Dennis all give the cover even more substance with their work. I called it Sally. Look out where you rolling river. 7 more years I long to have her. We're bound away across the wilderness of red. In fact, this song, along with some others on the second half of Down in the Groove, make it a not too bad record, which, you know, isn't the biggest compliment, but given the opinion of this record from almost everyone, it's potentially life-altering. And also, given some rocky moments, and I mean that in both senses, there is at least a hint of some redemption towards the end of this record with these songs, even if they have to come in the form of some half-baked covers. 90 Miles an Hour Down a Dead End Street, also on the second side of the record, is again an absolutely adequate song, within the context of this album, at least. Look, it's not earth-shattering, but it's better than some other songs here. And that's good for the record as a whole. It originally came out in 1963 and came in the form of a country song from Hal Blair and Don Robertson. Here, Dylan continues this run of pretty good vocal performances as the sonics are loose and fluid around him, but in a kind of good way this time. Bobby King and Willie Green provide some baritone backing vocals that again aid the song.
Disasters.
This song is captured back in April 1987, along with track 2, When Did You Leave Heaven? And look, it's another okay moment on the record. And there are a few okay moments. It's not all awful. And I include a decent cover of Let's Stick Together in that too. So in reality, while this is not a good album, I mean, I've literally seen people visually shudder at the mere mention of the record's title, it's not completely awful. There's some moments that are just fine. Most of side two, in fact, and Death Is Not the End. There's some good moments here, even, and a few individual performances and track 7 Silvio that really go some way to save the records. But the album commits possibly the worst crime of all. It's just never interesting enough. It's never weird in the way that Time Out of Mind has that oddness. It never surprises us in the way that Desire does. It never feels like it has anything to say or anywhere to go. It suffers from a creative flow problem, which isn't aided by a bitty, sporadic, and unfocused recording process with more than one missed opportunity. It might not be as bad as some people say, but this is definitely a low for Dylan. Thankfully, we still have some good moments to cling to that stop it being a complete and utter write-off. Death might not be the end, but Down in the Groove was almost. Is it for this episode? Share your thoughts on Down in the Groove. Is it an album that you secretly love, or is it an album that you detest? I get the impression it's one or the other. Share your thoughts at Bob Dylan Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter and Instagram. Next week, we are looking at an album that is, well, considered a classic by some. It's Nashville Skyline next week, an album where Dylan went country, of course, an album where he saw out an incredible decade of work, and an album where he teamed up with an idol. So we look at that next week. Looking forward to bringing that to you. In the meantime, as I say, there's loads and loads of episodes on the Patreon feed right now, including, most recently, an episode all about the brilliant song Simple Twist of Fate. Here is a little clip from that episode. Here he starts the main sequence with the E chord. This is played at the 5th fret and sounds something like this. From here we drop to the 4th fret as Dylan plays an E major 7, which sounds like this. Then there's the smallest of shifts, as one note moves further down the neck as we form the shape of an E7, which sounds like this.
With these chords, once again, we have a famous Dylan descending melody. We've mentioned this so many times in this podcast. It's present in songs like Standing in the Doorway or Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands, and here it is once again. It really is his secret trademark. After this, we find ourselves at the A chord, which sounds like this. So far we've had the main chord sequence of E, E major 7, E7, and A. But here comes my favourite bit. Dylan takes us to a chord that we might not have been expecting. In lesser songs, we might have expected him to give us another A chord on the line, "'Twas then he felt alone." That certainly fits. That feels complete, if you will. It gives it some symmetry. But what he actually does is he gives us an A minor, which sounds like this. This surprises us. It throws a spanner into the melody's works. It's like a knife twisting itself into the tune. It's a bitter fly in the ointment moment. So the sequence ends up sounding like this.
You can hear that episode in full and more like it. In fact, almost 50 like it now on the Patreon feed. The link is in this episode's description. Thanks once again for listening today. I will see you next week for Nashville Skyline. Take care.